I think another thing that maybe aggravates many listeners, particularly in the area of classical music, of the mispronouncing of classical names. But here again, this is the place that the announcers can learn to pronounce them correctly so that when they do go out into a commercial station, they won't make those same mistakes. Because I know so often in listening to a broadcast, everyone sounds so relaxed and calm, but they didn't know that just before they went on the air, they ran down the hall and took a deep breath and turned the mic on, and they just sounded like they'd just been sitting there relaxed when they really weren't at all. We do have a few paid announcers, but most of them are not. And so, of course, without, again, this devoted help of students, we would not be able to offer the services that we do. And, of course, needless to say, without my program director, John Athey, KRWG-FM would not be where it is today. We have a very devoted staff that's made this past decade a most memorable one. And, of course, we, again, owe much to the university for funding that it is the university and the Department of Journalism that have truly made radio a byword here in the Mesilla Valley and in the El Paso area, where we have very many listeners. And we know that radio and KRWG-FM will continue to grow, providing a continued service to people of all ages in news, public affairs, music, drama, and education that will enable this station to continue serving in the future as it has in the past.
KRWG is never the same hour after hour.
There are over 100 different programs a week, and our staff never gets a second chance to do the same type of show over again. Other stations only play records, do news, sportscasts, and commercials over and over. No two periods of time are the same on KRWG, and there are many difficult names to pronounce in our type of programming.
This is Tom Murray, has officially won the ASNMSU presidential election. This is Jeff Guy reporting from the Corbett Center election headquarters. We now return you to regular programming.
Hey, Jeff, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Oh, Jesus Christ, son of a bitch. I sure fucked that up.
What the hell did you do now?
Oh, I had the phone patched in on Channel 7, and I potted up Channel 8 when I said we were going over the election results instead, and that's why there was that 20-second delay there.
Oh, yeah. Don't worry about it. Nothing's going to happen.
Okay, well, we'll see you later then.
Okay, see you
later.
Bye-bye.
We'd like to remind you that Monday night, the Late Late Show will be heard a half hour later because we'll be bringing you the new Rod Serling production, the... The 0 hour. The production will begin Monday and end on Friday, with each day's program ending in a cliffhanger.
Alan Taylor does news on both FM and TV, and at times it's hard to tell which is which.
He said he'll ascend when he announced a new State of the Union message on such matters as inflation and the energy crisis. This has been News Break on KRWG Channel 22, public radio for the... Oh.
Another sad day at KRWG-FM was September 5th, 1972. New students were in training on the air. But after the first bulletin interruption at about noon, no one said anything to anybody. Nearly the whole day's broadcast schedule was dedicated to live broadcasts from rooftops in Olympic Village in Munich, Germany. Everyone was emotionally drained by the end of that day. David Heller of ABC News gave one of the best newscasts ever that night.
It's over now in Munich. West German police shot it out with the Arab commandos at the Munich airport. And when the shooting ended, all nine Israeli hostages, members of Israel's Olympic team, were dead. Police say they were shot by the Arabs when the shooting began. Four of the guerrillas were killed, three captured, one is still missing. At this point, the future of this 20th Olympiad is in doubt, maybe even the future of the Olympics themselves. ABC's Peter Jennings has some thoughts from Munich.
I think we're going to hear a great deal in the next few days from various Arab countries, and we're going to hear a great deal from Israel. All of it couched in very general accusatory terms. And I think when we hear it, it will probably suit us well to think back, A, on what the tragedy was here today, but B, on the atmosphere in which it happened. Because the atmosphere of the next few days is going to be far from peace and brotherhood on anybody's terms.
I'm David Heller, American FM Radio.
KRWG is a tape running out before the program is finished when it's being taped for more convenient hours. The Eastern-based networks have little regard for the Mountain Time Zone. The program director's nightmare is the taping and delaying of broadcasts for New Mexico listeners.
Our production director is Fred Dabney. As Martin Bond said at the outset of this broadcast, we can't even completely define KRWG-FM in 2 hours and 30 minutes. Well, the same can be said of Dead Frabney.
Paul Reeder said of me,
"You have very unique personalities like Fred Dabney. You won't find a personality like that easily duplicated anywhere in the country."
That statement's interesting, more for what it doesn't say than what it does. Rather like saying that malaria is rare among the Eskimo. It isn't something that's likely to bring forth rousing cheers from anybody. Oh, by the way, if you don't know, I'm like Fred Dabney, a name well understood by my associates and friend. It is I who, with great flair and zest, bring you evenings full of mispronounced names, strained wit, and dirty records in a style as light as cast-iron popcorn. I guess I have to claim the greatest seniority around here, as my career dates to the days of KNMA. That, for those of you who don't know, was a little AM operation located in the broom closet of the dispensary here on campus. I well recall our classical program, a thing called Silver Podium, a title with flair and originality, if not much sense. In the evening that one of the girls got the record album by Igor Oistrakh that contained the Mozart, the Tchaikovsky, and I think the Brahms Violin Concerti on two discs, and played them in complete random order without bothering to worry about which part of what work was played when. Things are, of course, much better now. We have stereo records. It was at this time I first foisted Basin Street on an unsuspecting world. That program is still running, but it's expanded both in operation and areas covered. I guess that Basin Street's the program that got me started on KRWG. I'd left the area during the 50s when my father volunteered me for the Air Force, and I spent a while on the Gulf Coast, not far from my hometown of New Orleans, which town I never made it to during the entire time I was away. But I finally got tired of watching my oil can rust and the humidity down there, so I packed up my junk and returned to the land of entanglement. When I arrived, I sampled the radio and promptly unplugged it. A short time later, I heard the university was going to start a new FM station, so I came in and started making noises about do this, do that, which were treated casually, shall we say. However, the early record library contained something like 20 copies of Enoch Light, and his peculiar percussion played the immortal love songs of William Randolph Hearst, with some other winners. Oh yes, they inherited that Oistrakh set I talked about. Since I had a large record library, I loaned a few of mine to help ease the rough spots, but that was all for then, as I was working at White Sands. Later on, that changed. Though trained as an electronics technician, my natural aptitude is for being a career ne'er-do-well. However, I wasn't doing so well in my chosen field, and my volunteer help had grown greatly, at least in terms of time spent down here. As a result of supplying first records and help to Al Rodney, who was doing the jazz program, one of the first things I did was dig out my old Benny Goodman recording of the Basin Street Blues and change the name of the program, after which I thoughtfully asked Al if he objected. Luckily, he didn't, and we're still good friends. Later, that help included confusing the students with obscure records on even more obscure labels full of strange music played by rafts of musicians with unpronounceable names, then on to doing the show myself and, of course, mispronouncing them. The process was aided by a lucky ability to crib album notes and sound like I was ad-libbing. And so it went until the point was reached where someone realized that if the way things were going, I was going to own the whole bloody place. So the decision was made in a high place. I should mention the men's room was on the floor above the studio, to add me to the payroll in the hopes of having some control over me. It hasn't worked, but it's been fun to get paid for doing one's hobby. I suppose the program for which I am best known is the one in which I call myself the late Fred Dabney. That's the Saturday night dance party, which comes on somewhere along 11:30, on Saturday night and runs until terminal disinterest sets in. The program is devoted primarily to the big bands and the small combos of the generally referred to as the swing era, with a strong emphasis on what during the period were referred to as the hot bands as opposed to the sweet bands, which perhaps points out one problem that we do have around here, and that's at a show of any sort which is done by an individual over a period of time is going to take on a character, a flavor, if you will, of the guy that's doing the show. And if you don't like the personality of the person who's doing the show, you're probably not going to like the personality of the program either. However, I do pride myself on having at least two or three loyal listeners who enjoy the music, and perhaps, who knows, what grounds I'll conquer next. In any event, when I heard that this was the 10th anniversary of the station, my immediate response was, "You're joking." Then I added, "Well, if you say so, Charlie, I'll take your word for it. It sure doesn't seem like it."
One Sunday evening, I myself sat down to do Sunday's musical theater. I innocently shoved the cartridge into the machine, and expecting my theme song to pour forth, pushed the button. What I expected was... But what I got was...
And now, Car Strong plays more toilet music.
Sports have always presented us with somewhat of a problem.
Our score, Lamar University from Beaumont, Texas, leading the New Mexico State Aggies at this point. We've got, you ready, Bob? 2 minutes and...
4 seconds.
...remaining in the first half.
It looked like it was Dennis Ware on the reception for New Mexico State.
And the turds are tiding.
So it'll be first down and goal to go. The ball is spotted right on the 10-yard line.
And now, KRWG-FM's most famous newscast.
News continues today from KRWG. I am Wink Baca. Testimony continues today in the district court trial of a Clovis man, Terry Willie Seaton, who is charged with the murder of William Davis of Carlsbad. Davis's manipulated body was found in his Carlsbad bakery May 19, 1971. District Attorney J. Lee Caffey of Carlsbad and Assistant District Attorney Morris Stagner of Roswell opened the prosecution's case yesterday afternoon. The trial was moved to Leventon on a change of venture motion. The prosecution has scheduled at least 32 witnesses, and defense attorneys Charles Fieser and Leonard May, both of Carlsbad, have scheduled 10 witnesses. Testimony continues today in the district court trial of a Clovis man, Terry Willie Sitton, who is charged with the murder of William Davis of Carlsbad. Davis' manipulated body was found in his... Testimony continues today in the district... Oh, fuck.
...1973's collection of program logs, tucked away in a filing cabinet, looked like the remains of a kindergarten's art class. Carrying Senate and House hearings on illegal gambling, health care, school busing, and arms limitation was always disruptive to a complicated broadcast schedule. But when the Watergate hearings began, any order of broadcasting went out the window. KRWG was the only radio station carrying the hearings from 7:30 in the morning until 6 in the evening. Many were upset that their favorite programs were canceled, but there were an equal number of listeners who were glad to find the hearings still on KRWG when the TV networks got bored and dropped their coverage. It would be interesting to see just how many hours of Watergate hearings and related broadcasts that were actually carried from ABC and NPR. Journalese, a program that should never be taken seriously, had the dubious honor of presenting the bulletin that Spiro Agnew had resigned. From October 1973 to August 1974, news was one complete blur. It was climaxed on August 8th of this year, when even National Public Radio had no idea of what it could possibly do to cover the news correctly.
We recorded this announcement at 11:45 a.m. Thursday, August 8th, in the National Public Radio studios in Washington, just a few minutes from the White House. We have no control over the rest of this announcement. If President Nixon announces that a resignation speech is forthcoming, if the President announces he will make no further decisions until the House of Representatives, if the President should resign today, the President will not resign if no word comes from the White House. With today's communications techniques, news travels quickly. It's easy to put things in perspective even before they have happened. But then you're in danger of people telling you what kind of media operation you run. No matter what happens today, you'll hear more of it tonight on All Things Considered from National Public Radio.
That evening, the picture was cleared with a presidential address that most of us will never forget. A speech that evoked both great relief and great sorrow from those who watched and listened.
Therefore, I shall resign the presidency effective at noon tomorrow. Vice President Ford will be sworn in as president at that hour in this office. As I recall the high hopes for America with which we began this second term, I feel a great sadness that I will not be here in this office working on your behalf to achieve those hopes in the next 2.5 years. But in turning over direction of the government to Vice President Ford, I know, as I told the nation when I nominated him for that office 10 months ago, that the leadership of America will be in good hands. In passing this office to the Vice President, I also do so with a profound sense of the weight of responsibility that will fall on his shoulders tomorrow, and therefore of the understanding, the patience, the cooperation he will need from all Americans.
We wish that we could have gotten everyone who is currently working on the station on the air tonight, but it just isn't possible. And we wish we could have mentioned all the names of everyone who ever worked here, but the amount of paper would rival the New York City phone book. And we particularly would like to thank each and every listener by name. You deserve special recognition, because without you, we have no reason to be here. Listeners, you have been so patient with us. We just hope that we reward you with some fine programming every day of every year. You are always welcome to call the station with your comments, and the door is always open to your personal visit. This is your station, your public station. We always enjoy meeting you on a one-to-one basis. Tonight's program has been top-heavy on the humorous side, not because we're really insane, although it helps, but because we thought it would make for more enjoyable listening. KRWG is probably equally humorous and serious, so's life. We could have done a show of all the bad times and taken our mistakes seriously, but you wouldn't have enjoyed it. As we have tried to show also tonight, that we have had some grim moments on the air with news coverage, and particularly this past year and a half. We end our 10th birthday party with an insane production by KNMS's student station manager, Jack Marr, and KRLD staff announcer, Blaine Least. The story thus far is as follows. Our hero, Jack, has won a telephone contest, and the prize is a tour of KRWG-FM. We join the action as Jack is pushed through the studio doors by tour guide Bob.
So he gave me a gentle push for the door, and soon I found myself a part of the throng of flesh, which made up the KRWG tour once more.
All right, then. Now that we're all back together, I think I might preclude our FM tour with a little bit of history about KRWG itself.
You know, as I stood there and studied him, I couldn't help but feel pity for this man. Really, it was obvious that his entire life revolved around that station. For all I knew, he might have come out of a microphone. Our guide reached inside his jumper and produced several faded snapshots, which he proudly flashed in front of the group's eyes. The first one depicted a rather moronic-looking individual, attired in earphones, and showed him plugging his index finger into a wall socket.
This is our glorious founder, Robert W. Dottard. With only a handful of pennies and a pocket of dreams, RWD was on top of the cream.
Oh, somebody notify the world we've got another Shakespeare, I thought.
One night, RWD was sustaining his usual overnight vigil on the station he had created when he accidentally electrocuted himself.
From the looks of things, old RWD planned his accidents expertly. Bob paused for a moment to wipe a tear which had escaped from behind his left lens. He then shoved a picture at us of a small building which had a half moon on the front door.
This was the first studio of KRWG. As you can see, we've come a long way since then.
He made a sweeping gesture across the hall of the place and directed us over to a door on which a half moon was inscribed.
Enough history. It's time to enter into the 100,000-watt world of KRWG FM.
We all herded in mass through the half moon entrance and reached an inner door on which a time-worn sign reading Record Library was posted.
FM, as many of you know, is serving a community composed of a variety of elements. As a result, the programming must also cover a wide range. To start with, the classics.
His voice changed in accordance with the subject and sounded like the kind of guy who narrates bird films. Bob placed a neatly manicured finger to his lips. For a moment, my heart leapt with joy. Perhaps this gesture meant he was finally going to shut up. I should have known better.
I'm going to have to ask you all to remain quiet now, as the contents of this room could very easily be disturbed by any undue noise on our part.
The guide then blew a layer of dust off an iron handle attached to the door. He spent what seemed like a millennium opening the ominous entranceway. Finally, we were able to see a long corridor behind the door, dark and foreboding. Although our arrival had disturbed some clouds of dust, which had apparently lain dormant for years, none of us dared choke as it permeated our respiratory systems, as per Bob's strict orders for silence.
Ladies and gentlemen,
he whispered,
we are now at the one place where hundreds of years of classical artists and composers yet live, that continuum where time stands still.
He cupped his hands around his mouth.
Ladies and gentlemen, the FM Record Library!
All the way down the corridor, a sound of terminal destruction echoed on and on, as what I presume to be aged and delicate albums vibrated themselves to death as they crashed to the marble floor.
Probably get docked for that one,
Bob moaned. Undaunted, however, he strode over to one side of the passage and pressed a button which was inserted in the forehead of Cuba. Simultaneously, some music began playing which sounded like something you'd hear at a wake. The floor opened up ahead of us and a series of motors gyrated from somewhere below. Slowly, deliberately, an object rose until it was level with the floor. After some moments of study, I realized that a sarcophagus had appeared, and instead of the usual Egyptian pharaoh, there was a wooden likeness of Ludwig van Beethoven carved on top. To the horror of some of the tour members, Bob opened the coffin's top and raced inside.
I'd like you all to meet Menton Berlin's Times Past, our record library director.
Bob grunted as he pulled on an arm within.
I say, did somebody call me?
A voice which sounded like yellowed parchment filtered out of the box. Then I looked as Bob extricated a man who was certainly older than dirt itself. This flesh antique then rose and stood before us for some moments, apparently waiting for his heart to start again. Bob prodded the old man in an effort to get him going. Apparently our guide had prodded a bit too hard because Benton commenced wheezing so hard that I'd assume he donated his lungs to science without waiting to die first.
I say, Benton, tell the people about our record library. Wouldn't that be champion?
Bob encouraged. Benton seemed startled at Bob's voice and looked about him in a mild stupor.
Oh, is that where I am?
Benton's expression was one of discovery, of finding something anew. Suddenly the old man acted like he'd just gotten a hot flash and started in on a totally impromptu speech.
My name is Benton Mullins. Time's past.
He seemed to have exerted so much energy in getting his name out that the tour couldn't help but break out in applause and recognizance of his valiant effort.
Hundreds of thousands of thousands of thousands of thousands.
Benton sounded as if he'd hit a scratched groove. After about 20 more thousands, Bob tapped Benton lightly on the back in an effort to unstick him.
Thousands of years of classics are kept in these noble archives. The works of the masters of Haydn, Bergorsky, Lefkowitz, Chaim, Wagner, Kufour all live with their original richness and color. Let's take, for example, a classic piece of orchestration which combines both tempo and mood, form a texture of consistent effectiveness, the infamous Tragic Symphony in C minor.
Benton stumbled out of his sarcophagus and reached up to a high shelf. Well, apparently its height was too much for his wafer-thin frame, as a sickening crack cut through the musty atmosphere.
My goodness!
Benton uttered. Bob, in keeping with his usual courteous self, executed a swift karate chop to Benton's outstretched back, which subsequently sent this man, whom I was sure was once on a first-name basis with Adam, sprawling to the dusty floor.
Oh, well, it wasn't a great piece anyway.
Benton rasped. Bob then gathered up Benton's and tossed through his 1 foot a potato sack back into the coffin.
Thank you, Mr. Times Past.
Bob burst, apparently trying to vocally cover the painful groans of the beaten director, as he lay in his box. With a quick backward flip of his hand, Bob pressed the button on Schubert's head and slammed the coffin lid with his foot.
Enough of the classics. Let's visit a more contemporary KRWG-FM.
He popped inside a side panel in the wall and motioned for us to follow him. Almost immediately, we found ourselves inside an elaborate control room, much more impressive than the station's AM counterpart down the hall. There was so much electronic hardware in the form of tape decks, turntables, cartridge machines, and the like, that most of the group could only conjure a few gurgles while gaping. Obviously pleased by this, Bob pranced in front of the tour and began chirping.
Welcome to FM Control, gang. I think we're in luck today. We're going to be able to witness the 100,000-watt voice speak live and in color.
As he lectured, the door opened and a shifty-eyed man entered. The kind of guy you'd expect to see selling battery-operated neon ties on some indiscreet street corner. He carried a number of albums under one arm and was constantly looking behind him with quick glances.
Double-dip dandy!
Bob began dancing in place.
It's the FM program director.
The shifty-eyed man pushed his way past Bob and sat down in front of a microphone quietly. He then signaled for us to be silent as he played a tape cartridge and turned on the mic.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to another Maladies, the program that asked, did you milk your toaster oven today, lady? Did you milk your toaster oven today? A very good question. Did you know kumquats are capable of mouth-to-mouth resuscitation? Which reminds me of the time I was an air molecule.
He continued babbling for some moments when suddenly he broke out laughing.
I just realized I don't exist.
Whereupon his rantings grew so frenzied that even Bob began inching away from the control board. Suddenly, the door to the room opened and two men in white suits hustled in, butterfly nets in hand.
Remember, the organic gelato died for your sins!
As he was bustled away back to Happy Land, I couldn't help but sympathize with the man. Compared to some of the halfway house candidates lurking around that place, this guy was tame. Bob's perpetual optimism suffered none as he cleared his throat and gave us his most authoritative voice.
As always, we are prepared for this eventuality.
He spoke assuredly.
Should one of our FM people be unable to complete their shifts, we have this little baby to take over.
He gave an affectionate pat to an immense mechanical monstrosity which rested against a far wall.
This is our deluxe Robotron automation unit, which doubles as an overnight camper and a two-tone commode if necessary. Plus, now get this, folks, matching chartreuse air horns that were removed from the first Peterbilt 12-ton semi to arrive in these parts.
Bob went over to a small glass case in which a single red button was visible.
Our guide then pointed to a digital clock at the base of the unit, which was slowly counting backwards in faint yellow numerals.
Stand by.
Bob forewarned.
10, 9, 8.
Bob's clenched fist crashed through the glass case.
7, 6, 5, 4.
His index finger was poised above the button.
3, 2, 1.
He depressed the circuit and flashed a knowing smile at the group. Without saying a word, believe me, I was surprised, Bob pointed to a series of tape reels which automatically started rolling.
Good old Robo has completely taken over now. Nothing for us to do but sit back, relax, and enjoy.
So I sat back, relaxed, and enjoyed while Robo started emitting a warped version of the national anthem while the announcer related how KRWG-FM was bringing an end to its broadcast day. While this occurred, another tape with some radio drama on it powdered out from the unit's overmodulating speakers. Noise upon noise flowed out of good old Robo while Bob stared in horror.
I never experienced, that is, the Tortugas School Guide of Tour Guide Rules, a procedure booklet, never, I really don't know what to do.
He stammered as the machine began belching out columns of acrid-smelling black smoke. I couldn't believe my ears. The cool, collected,
I've got an answer for everything.
Bob no longer existed. In his place was a nervous, sniveling Casper Milktoast, who was cautiously backing away from his smoking electronic slave as it began rocking forward.
I never knew it was capable of movement.
Were Bob's last words on this earth as I saw a reel of tape unwind itself around Bob's neck. While this mechanical Boston strangler finished its job, a cuckoo popped from out of the top of the tiller and peeped,
Ball game's over!
All I could remember after that was a bright flash and then darkness. When I awoke, I found myself in front of my television as the last few notes of Aloha Ui played themselves out as a National Geographic special on Hawaii ended. My nightmare had been so vivid that I was drenched in a cold sweat, and the pineapple I'd held in my right hand had wilted. I laughed out loud at my own foolish imagination, but at the same time, I breathed a sigh of relief, now realizing that such a place as KRWG AM or FM, where people like Bob, Benton Times Past, or a Robotron automation unit never actually existed. I popped a few macadamia nuts in my mouth good-naturedly as a sort of toast to the real world I was in now. Suddenly, the phone rang and interrupted my intense thoughts.
Hello, I garbled, since I still had a mouthful of macadamia.
Hi there, nice weather we're having.
It hardly seems like 10 years have passed since that first election night, but the boxes of old news have turned from their original bright yellow to a nondescript sawdust color. The ink is gone from those pages, and only impressions of the teletype key remains to tell that these words were ever spoken. The program logs have been placed in boxes and moved here and there and forgotten. They contain names of students who have learned the ropes of radio and gone to work at stations all across the United States. It's hard to connect names on these old logs with memories of faces, but they were here and dedicated innumerable hours. That's just about all there is left: newsprint, logs, and names. Everyone who was here in 1964, 65, 66, even up through 1970 is gone. Hours were spent preparing and producing, and it all went through the air so fast and was lost. Well, it's over. 10 years are gone and 10 more faces. Even today is over. It was important once.
New signals from the White House.
But now, it is only so much paper and ink.
President Ford has firmly, flatly, and finally ruled out any form of additional tax on gasoline as part of his overall plan for the nation's economy. Knowledgeable sources say the option of a 10 to 30 cent tax on gas has been discarded by the president. A second tax option is described as still alive but not yet firmly approved by the president. This is the so-called Robin Hood approach, which would additionally tax the rich in order to cut taxes for the poor. A surcharge would be added to those in high income tax brackets.